You don't need to change who you are. Just simply have 10% more energy than you normally do.
So based on the communication, what would be the secrets to know whether you should trust that person or not?
Why would you say that to me? That's rude. How dare you? That's not in control.
What do you mean by character? How can someone break the ice?
Next time you go order coffee after Ramadan or in the evenings, start a conversation with the barista. Start a conversation with the person serving the coffee. Just a little bit more than you normally would. Ask them how's their day going. But people judge from how you look very, very quickly. And they end up judging you on your status as well, on what you do for work. How much power do you have?
All right, we're here with another special episode with a special guest right here, Shako Lockman. It's a pleasure to have you, man.
Likewise, brother. Thank you for having me.
So for the audience who don't know you, who is Shako?
So I'm an executive communication coach. I'm a Kurdish immigrant. I grew up in Sydney, Australia. I'm a university dropout. And now I teach executives, high-level CEOs and leaders how to have an executive presence.
That is interesting. You said you're a dropout who teaches now executives that potentially came from college.
It is interesting, isn't it?
So it seems that college isn't that much relevant to your success in life, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, depends what field. Like, for example, if you're going to be a professional in a very specific industry, for example, if you're going to be an engineer or a lawyer or a doctor or a dentist, of course, you need the education for it. However, that doesn't guarantee success. What I say is IQ might get you the degree and the job, but EQ gets you promoted. Because there's so many executives. For example, take the typical IT engineer. A lot of them are pretty introverted, right? Like, you know, more of a introverted, laid back kind of men and women. They, because they're introverted, they don't have that skill. They haven't developed a skill to be extroverted and to be grounded in their communication as well. They don't necessarily have to be extroverted, but just being confident in their delivery, being grounded, being assertive, they don't teach that in the degree. So that's something that you can learn and you should learn outside of your formal education. I haven't seen any courses at university that teach communication skills at a very real level, practical level.
Now, this is something really interesting that it is very important these days for people able to communicate things that they have lost throughout this time, as we became more reliant on social media.
Yep.
We became more reliant on observing things, but not talking about it. We're just typing away our emotions, our communication to other people. And the moment you start interacting in the real life, you feel like it's very socially awkward for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's a skill that you need to learn. And unfortunately, especially these days, as you said, these days, it's a skill that not everybody has because everybody's glued to their phone. They're glued to their screens. When they go to work, they're focusing on the screen at work. Let's say they take the train home. In many major cities, people take the train home, right? They commute. They're on their phone on the way home. They're looking at their phone over dinner. After dinner, they might talk to their wives for like a minute and then they watch TV together. And there's no communication happening. It's just passive. It's completely passive. And you can distinguish yourself as a professional in any profession, by the way, even with religious figures. Mufti Menk is extremely popular now. What is it that separates him from so many other sheikhs?
It's the way he communicates.
It's the way he communicates. He's charismatic. He's lovable. People love listening to him speak. And there's a few other examples of that as well, even in the religious community. So what separates good from great, in my opinion, is your ability to communicate and articulate your competence.
So what made you become a communication coach?
It was turning my curse into a blessing. So part of the reason I dropped out of university was because I was dealing with social anxiety. And it was pretty major. It even started affecting me physically. I would get sick, but my body would want to avoid people and I would believe my way into being sick. I know that sounds kind of crazy, but it's pretty much what happened. I would stress myself. Sorry?
It's your mindset.
It was my mindset. It literally triggered a stress response in my body, which triggered eczema, for example, all over my body and anxiety and depression and these sorts of things. So while I was at university, that's when I was introduced to the world of personal development, with classic books like How to Win Friends and Influence People, 48 Laws of Power, The Power of Now, all of those entry-level personal development books, especially for communication. And that's when I was peeking behind the curtain and I realized, oh my goodness, there is a whole world out there that teaches people how to be better, just in general. Personal development, self-improvement. I can improve myself. And there were topics on confidence and communication, even dating and business, making money. I thought, wait, so I don't have to be broke. I don't have to be insecure. I don't have to be lonely. These are things that I can actually improve proactively by learning how to communicate better, how to think in a better way, going back to mindset, how to carry myself better. Hamid, I just became obsessed at that point. Dropped out of uni, went into sales, found mentors, and that was about 12 years ago. Since then, worked with so many mentors, invested in myself, got tons of reference experience. Reference experience, I believe, is a very important word for the audience who's trying to improve their communication skills. Get as much reference experience as you can. What is that? Reference experience are experiences that you're stacking up that you can refer back to. For example, if you have a little bit of social anxiety, let's say you're a little bit shy starting conversations with people, next time you go order coffee after Ramadan or in the evenings, start a conversation with the barista. Start a conversation with the person serving the coffee. Just a little bit more than you normally would. Ask them, how's their day going? Where are you originally from? That's interesting. Try to guess where they're from. Things like this. Now that is a reference experience. Next time you're in an elevator with somebody, compliment their outfit, for example. Be tasteful about it. Be a gentleman about it. That is another reference experience. They're not all going to be perfect. You're going to have situations that are maybe going to be awkward. And that's the best kind of reference experience because you reflect on it.
Would you say it's similar to something like a small talk in a way that you're able to just introduce a topic that can break the ice? As they
small
say.
Talk is an example of that. So giving a compliment isn't necessarily small talk. Asking one question isn't necessarily small talk, but you can use small talk as a way to practice, absolutely.
So how can someone break the ice? For example, if I'm standing somewhere in the cafe and I see an interesting person, how do I break the ice with that person? Someone that I never know.
That's a very good question. So if you think that they look interesting, use that as the icebreaker. For example, hey man, sorry to interrupt. I see that you're reading or working, but you actually have a very interesting style. I'm curious, are you in a creative field? Don't even ask, assume. When you cold read, this is called cold reading. When you cold read somebody based off how they look, what they're doing, what they're wearing, that is a way of reading them and creating a more dynamic opening to the conversation. Because, for example, he might say, I'm a video editor or I'm a designer. How did you know? And then you get into a conversation. Or he might say, no, I'm not, but thank you so much for the compliment. Like, what makes you think that? They'll be curious anyway. So a cold read is a great way to break the ice. Just assume something about them.
So make an assumption, even if it's wrong.
Make an assumption in a friendly way. Have a smile on your face. Be friendly about it and be open and also a little bit inquisitive, a little bit curious in your face. It's like, I'm curious, are you in the creative field? Or it looks like you're reading. You can even just make a comment that is a genuine opinion that you have. For example, I got to tell you, sorry to interrupt, but it's so refreshing to see somebody journaling or reading in a cafe these days rather than scrolling on your phone. What are you reading anyway?
Okay.
Just something about the moment.
Does it matter about the gender, whether you're approaching a man or a female in terms of that perspective? Because in different societies, there's different ways that, you know, you can't really do the same approach that you would do in a Western world, I would say.
Yeah, I would say you need to read the room and you need to have a level of social intelligence for sure. For example, if you're in a very Islamic country, or if you're in a country that's very reserved, maybe your approach would be different. Maybe you shouldn't be approaching women that way, right? But even if you do, it has to be in a very, very, whether you do or not, in a Western or not Western country, you have to do it in a very, very respectful and polite way, regardless. But it's the same approach.
We'll definitely talk more about approaching certain individuals. I just wanted to say, with everything that you've built yourself from social anxiety to now being a master to the communication and becoming a communication coach, if you were to start from zero right now, what would be the first thing you would do?
I love that question because that's exactly what I did. I started from zero. And the best advice I have for anybody to improve their communication skills is work on your confidence.
Confidence.
How? Work on your confidence. Work on your self-esteem. Read a book. A really great book on this is called The Six Pillars of Self-Esteem by Nathaniel Brandon. It's the best book on confidence I've ever read. He's a clinical psychologist. And a few of the pillars are, for example, how? Practice self-acceptance. Most people who lack confidence socially, but also just internally, it's because of a lack of self-acceptance. For example, they might meet people, experience some social anxiety, and judge themselves for feeling nervous. If I get nervous, like let's take a podcast for an example. I don't feel nervous, but if I did, I would be okay with that. And sometimes I might. Sometimes I might have a public speaking gig. And because I don't public speak that often, I can do it, but I don't do it that often. Because it's rare, sometimes I get a bit nervous before speaking up. I've developed the trait of self-acceptance, which means I'm no longer resisting that I'm feeling a bit nervous. I'm just feeling a bit nervous. I'm okay with that. That's confidence, man, compared to somebody who is trying to hide it and trying to like portray the best version of themselves. And that creates a very dense energy.
A lot of the people in terms of general, they think that most speakers that excel when speaking don't seem to have any nervous or anxiety or any sorts of, you know, feeling of discomfort. That's opposite what they truly feel, I would assume.
Yeah, it's not true. They're just better at dealing with it, not better at hiding it.
They're better at handling the pressure.
They're better at handling the pressure and handling the emotions that they're experiencing internally.
Similar to athletes, I would say. You're just an athlete and being able to communicate things to the wider public.
That's a really good analogy, because if you look at fighters, for example, you can very often tell who's going to win a fight just from the face-off.
Mm.
From the face-off. Literally, because it's so much a mental game. Somebody has lost before they even step into the ring or the octagon. It's literally just a matter of, do they believe they can handle it or not? And sometimes you can tell if somebody's bluffing as well.
I can definitely see that. I mean, like similar to athletes, they're consistently working on themselves. It's a more of a self-development if you think about it. They're working on how their techniques is. They're working on how their fighting strategy is going to be like. Everything is working on developing their strength, their own strength, more than anything else. And similar to speaking, I would assume you're just constantly practicing this craft in order to become a better speaker. And that's what communication coaches do, I would assume. Yeah.
Absolutely, brother. It's a skill that you're constantly practicing. As I said, what you just described is reference experience. When you're practicing, when you cold read somebody, when you ask somebody what book they're reading, that's all reference experience. Even if you're not comfortable coming onto a podcast, going onto a podcast or starting your own, that's reference experience that you're building up. And the more experience you have, the more you can reflect on it, the more you reflect. This is another way to increase your confidence, by the way, to answer your earlier question. Reflect on your mistakes without judging yourself. When you judge yourself, that's your ego, man. When you judge yourself, that's you blowing up out of proportion how much your self-importance.
Mm.
When people judge themselves and victimize themselves, they're just blowing their self-importance completely out of proportion. That's all they're doing.
So how could you do the opposite of that?
By accepting what you're going through. And the way to do that, the way to accept, for example, someone might ask, how can I accept the fact that I'm feeling horrible, the fact that I'm very nervous? How can I accept that? The way to do it is just observe it. Awareness. Awareness equals acceptance. Awareness without trying to change it. Imagine you're experiencing some nervousness. Let's say I'm sitting here right now. And for anybody listening while they're sitting down, don't do this while you're driving. But if you're listening and you're sitting down, if you have any particular emotion that you've been carrying through the day. Could be stress, could be anxiety, maybe even you're a bit tired, whatever it is. I want you to just pay attention to where it is in your body. Take a moment. You can pause the podcast if you wish. Take a moment to notice where it is in your body and relax that part of your body. For example, nervousness, anxiety might be in your belly. Breathe into it and you relax it and you feel, okay, I'm nervous and I'm just going to allow it to be there without changing it, because you need to let it run its course.
Do you think the breathing pattern helps a lot?
Absolutely. Because when we hold our breath, that affects our physiology. Mm. It creates tension. And when you're experiencing anxiety, for example, a symptom of anxiety is increased heart rate. So when you slow down your breath, that actually slows down your heart rate. And if you have one of those Fitbits or Apple Watches, you can test it as well.
So going into back to the topic, when it comes to Dubai, why did you choose Dubai as your base?
Man, I gotta say, I love this city. I love this city. It feels like home. I traveled a lot. I grew up in Sydney, Australia, which is it's a beautiful city, amazing country. Sydney felt a little bit corporate for me. And because I love traveling as well, Australia is far from everything in the world. It's like a 16-hour flight from Dubai to Sydney.
Everywhere else you want to go is a long way flight.
Exactly. But in Dubai, you're close to everything. Mm-hmm. That was one big reason. Second reason was it's a Muslim country, alhamdulillah, which is very important for me. And third reason was just the ease and safety of living. Setting up our visas here, setting up my business, my company, my employees, everything was just seamless, man. And it's a city that rewards hard work and entrepreneurship. It doesn't punish it. Unfortunately, a lot of Western countries, they punish entrepreneurship with the amount of taxes that you have to pay, for example. One more thing I'll add, last thing, is the efficiency of the city. It's just extremely easy. I know this sounds so simple and almost silly, but it's so easy to find parking. I texted you before the podcast saying, hey, how many work at this air parking nearby? Even after I texted you, I realized, I'm like, there definitely will be. Like, literally just downstairs. There's always parking available, I've noticed. It's amazing.
It depends on the location, though, and certain places. But the government makes it easier with giving you different types of apps that you can check and exactly know exactly if there's any parking available spaces around certain parts of the cities. So there's always ways where the government will try to help in making this city as tech heavy as possible to have the services available online and physically. So you don't necessarily have to visit the places or the government entities in order to resolve the things that you have. You can just do everything within your own phone.
It is. It's there. Pretty incredible.
Everything's there.
Very efficient.
Now, when it comes to you being a communication coach, what is that one social skill that will make people stand out right here in the city that you found out?
In Dubai?
Yes.
I got to tell you, it's actually a lack of a trait. It's not a particular skill. It's a lack of trying to prove yourself. One mistake people make when they try to meet people, especially in a city like Dubai, because there's a lot of high-performing entrepreneurs and business people, is sometimes people try to prove themselves a little bit too much. So when you don't try to prove yourself, you're completely grounded and authentic. I believe that makes you stand out so much, and people end up connecting with you so well. You end up building proper relationships, deep connections. So the answer to your question would be being authentic without trying to prove yourself.
What does it mean to be authentic? Are you talking about being in terms of the way you communicate or the way you show yourself? Or how can someone really truly be authentic?
It is in the way you communicate, because that's a reflection of what's going on internally. Being authentic means spending time and energy with people that you genuinely want to spend time and energy with. Not saying things just because you think it's going to impress somebody. Not buying something just because you think it's going to impress somebody. It's saying things, doing things, and behaving in ways that are in alignment with your genuine values, your authentic values. And when you feel, when you meet somebody, Hamid, who is grounded, who is calm, who isn't swayed easily, They become more trustworthy, don't they?
Mm.
Because it's like, even if this guy isn't a social butterfly, I trust him more because there's a groundedness about him. He seems established and grounded, maybe in his faith, maybe in his values, in his family values, whatever it might be. So for me, when I meet somebody in Dubai, especially who has that energy, that makes him stand out.
Interesting. It's funny that you say that. I tend to do feel people who are always speaking in a rush, I always feel like they're very energetic. There's some type of people you feel sort of a discomfort. It's like they tend to behave in a way that it feels like it's not that authentic from the way they rush, from the way they're trying to please, people please, as they say.
Yeah, there's a lot of that.
That's what I see. But there's also other people who are generally, they're hyperactive. They just speak like they're literally high. They're just like, this is normal personality of them. So how do you differentiate that this is authentically them, just being them? And there's other people who are really not trying to be authentic. They're trying to be people pleasing.
So. It's a good question, man. Very good question. It aligns. It has to do with how aligned are they with their words, actions, and behaviors as well. So we're getting into the category of learning how to read people now, which is a very important subject in social intelligence.
It's part of another communication. You're communicating through body more so.
Yeah. Yeah. You can read the body language, for example. You read speech patterns, notice differences, discrepancies in how somebody is behaving and what they're saying, for example.
Mm.
For example, if somebody's like super energetic, but you realize that the way that they speak to you and somebody else, maybe even the waiter, is completely different, then there's a misalignment there. For example, something that's happened to me, this happened to me a few weeks ago. This is how you can tell if somebody's being authentic or not. I went to a dinner party, and usually when I meet people who are mutual friends, very often, I'm not bragging here, but very often people know me before I meet them, just because of my social media presence. And because, I mean, it's a small circle as well, like with my friend group, as we were talking about as well. So sometimes people know me, but even if they don't, what I've noticed is people treat you with respect. Generally, people treat you with respect, and that's my number one value. I was at this dinner party. I said hello to my friends, you know, shook their hands, hugged them. And there was one guy who was talking to one of my friends. I shook my friend's hand. And when I shook this guy's hand, he didn't even look at me. He kept talking to my friend, and he just gave me his hand, like in a very limped way, and didn't even look me in the eye. I noticed that. I'm like, all right, well, that's not very respectful.
What does that mean?
It's just a lack of respect, brother. It's a lack of respect. It's a lack of good manners. It was impolite. But I'm not going to be butthurt about it. For me, I just noticed it. I'm like, all right, that's the kind of person he is. No worries. We sit down. We're talking at the dinner table. And I end up telling a story. And he realizes how much the guys on the table are respecting me. And he realizes what I do. And then later, he comes up to me. And he says, Shaka, right? I say, yep. And he says, I just got to say, man, I saw your Instagram. I love your work. I would love to catch up with you. Would love to get a coffee with you. Grab my hand, looked me in the eyes like this, super friendly. And I was like, thank you so much, brother. Thank you so much. Very nice to meet you as well. Now, do you think I'm going to trust a man like this? This is somebody who is incongruent. Again, I'm not judging him, but I'm aware. I can see. To answer your question, right? I can see whether or not this guy is people-pleasing now, which he was, or if he's genuinely energetic.
Don't you think that most people judge a person not by the way he communicates first, but by what he does in life? So usually people ask you, what do you do? And then based on that, they judge how much of a level of respect they should give to you.
Unfortunately, that is the case. But it's not the first thing. The first thing that people judge you on is the way that you look, the way that you dress. How you dress, it makes... they've done experiments, actually, where they had two people on the streets in New York asking for money, asking for spare change for the bus. That was the social experiment. The first person was dressed in a hoodie and sweatpants, kind of looked homeless. He would ask people. He didn't get anybody. He asked 10 people. He didn't get a single person to give him change. They had a man in a suit asking the exact same question. And I think it was like 6 out of 10 people gave him money.
Really?
Yeah. They asked the same question, but people judge from how you look very, very quickly. And they end up judging you on your status as well, on what you do for work. How much power do you have? What can you do for them? That's essentially what people look for. But I think, in my opinion, the best people are the ones who look at character.
We'll see.
You know, even when I'm hiring, I don't look for the most skilled people. I look for people that have character.
What do you mean by character?
Are they reliable? Are they trustworthy? Are they honest? Do they have confidence? Are they authentic in the way that they communicate?
Doesn't this require time to find out whether they're trustworthy? Like, I believe trust is based on time and credibility and maybe based on past experiences. But a lot of the things that takes to develop a relationship with one another takes time.
Yep. Yep. That's a very, very good point. And trust can only be broken with time. So that is the only way that you can truly measure it. I completely agree. But there are signs that show you whether or not somebody is trustworthy from the first moment that you meet them. I'm not saying the first minute, because some people they need to break out of their shell a little bit. But the way that somebody communicates, it tells you a lot about them. It tells you a lot about them. And this is when reading people comes into play as well.
Interesting. So based on the communication, what would be the secrets to know whether you should trust that person or not? In general.
Notice congruencies. Congruency is one of the best ways to tell whether or not you can trust somebody. Again, how congruent are they? For example, that example that I gave, this guy was rude to me before he knew who I was. After he knew who I was, he was very nice to me. I can't trust that kind of person, right? Somebody that speaks behind other people's back. If you are talking to somebody and they're gossiping, you should avoid this type of person, because if they're comfortable gossiping to you, they're probably comfortable gossiping about you as well. Mm. That's another thing. Another one is somebody who's not comfortable admitting their mistakes or admitting that they don't know somebody. For example, I had a job interview a few weeks ago. I was interviewing somebody for our team, and I asked her a question, a simple question on how she would deal with this situation. She didn't know what this situation meant. I'm not going to say specifically what the situation was. It's a little sensitive. But rather than admitting that she didn't know what I was talking about, she tried to come up with an answer, even though she had no idea what she was talking about. At then I said, "You don't know what that means, do you?" And she said, "No, I don't." And I said, "Then why did you try to come up with an answer for the past 5 minutes? I would rather you just say, I don't know."
Because people are afraid, don't you think? They try to impress you.
Exactly. That's not a good quality. That's a low value quality. When you try to impress people, that's a sign of low value. You know why? Because you're seeking validation. You're not internally validated. If somebody's internally validated, for example, they're self-amused, they can make themselves laugh, they can be comfortable in their own skin, that's somebody that you can probably trust, because they don't need that external validation.
Some people would say that you should fake it till you make it. What do you think of that statement?
So,
like, as a communication, you fake it in a stage, you fake it in a way that you can somehow make yourself believe that you can do it, and then being able to achieve it in reality.
Yeah. I believe faking it till you're making it is good advice, as long as what you're trying to fake is a positive thing. For example, if you're trying to fake yourself looking smart or rich or popular, that's not something you should fake. That's something that you should generally make. Right?
And earn it.
Yeah, you should absolutely earn it. But other things, for example, good body language. That's something that you have to fake until you make. There's no way around that. You have to push through that imposter syndrome that you feel. There's always a teething period. Sometimes some of my clients, if they don't have strong body language, and I tell them, I encourage them to walk with their shoulders back, their chest out, they tell me it feels uncomfortable. I say, of course it does, because you're not used to it. You're just getting used to it. Bad body language feels comfortable for you simply because You've been doing it for years. So make this the new normal. My open body language, I have great body language now, obviously. That's because I normalized it. At first, it felt awkward. Now it's just normal for me. So there is a teething period that you have to go through when you're faking it till you're making it. As long as your intentions are good, it's fine.
So let's talk about charisma, which is very important in these days. What's the biggest mistake people make when it comes to trying to be charismatic?
I would say the biggest mistake is believing that they have to change who they are. For example, are you more extroverted or introverted?
I would say I'm both at the same time.
Yeah? Yeah.
Like I have my own places where I'm very introvert, yeah. Especially at home. But for my job, I have to be extrovert in a way.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think I'm the same. I'm an ambivert. It's called ambivert. So I'm an ambivert. It's more in the middle, but I lean more towards introversion. Now, I have some introverted clients, for example, who say they want to be charismatic. They say, how do I be extroverted? And my question is, do you want to change your personality? Do you want to change who you are? They say, no. I say, okay, well, you can still be charismatic even if you're introverted. Extroverted just means you get more energy when you socialize. That's all the word means. Introverted means when you socialize, it takes a bit more energy from you. Like for me, for example, after podcasts like this for an hour, I can do an hour. I can even do 2 hours, but after 2 hours, I need to go be by myself. Like I'll go to my office. I might even go somewhere by myself and read a book. So I need that time to recharge. So you don't need to change who you are. For example, now I'm feeling more introverted. I don't mean just in the moment right now. I mean these days. Because it's Ramadan, I'm a bit more laid back.
You haven't ate much, you haven't drank anything.
Yeah, you don't eat much, you're more laid back. I tend to be a little bit more introverted. I don't go out as much with friends. So, but even if I'm on a podcast, I can switch on my communication. And that's something that I'd encourage the listeners to learn. Switch it on, your charisma. The way you do that is with your gestures, with your body language, with your tonality, your facial expressions. You don't need to change who you are. Just simply have 10% more energy than you normally do.
So would that be enough just to make you charismatic in a way?
It'll be a step in the right direction. People, when they start to speak in a little bit more animated way, for example, they're starting to use their gestures a little bit. It's an easy way to be more charismatic. They might feel like it's a lot. They're doing a lot, but because they're so used to being in their shell, it doesn't look like a lot. Maybe they're just doing this every now and then. So it's a step in the right direction.
Let's say I'm in a networking event and there's a group of people that are gathering and they're talking with each other. How do I get myself into that group and have the people respect my presence around them? That they were curious to know, who's this person?
Do you mean just entering a room in general or entering a group conversation?
Let's say there was like a room and it's a group of conversation with different people that know each other. But you're the first time coming there to this network and you want to introduce yourself and make a strong first impression.
Love it.
How do you go about that?
The first thing is have fantastic body language. Your body language has to be on point. That's the first thing. That means your shoulders are back, your chest is out, your chin is up, not too high. You don't want to look arrogant. Your chin is up. You have solid eye contact. You hold eye contact with people a few seconds at a time. Unless you're in conversation, you hold it for longer. And dress for the occasion as well. Dress nice. Be well-groomed. Even smell nice. These things go a long way. The way that you dress, it goes a long way. But more important, your body language is actually more important. Once you're in the room, don't stand around awkwardly with your hands in your pockets or looking at your phone. Make a rule to not look at your phone when you're at a networking event. That's an escape. That's just people trying to feel comfortable in their skin because they're trying to avoid starting conversations or avoid the discomfort. Don't look at your phone. Make that a rule. The first person you see, just walk up to them and say, "Hi, Shoka, nice to meet you. What brings you to the event?" Easiest icebreaker.
What about if it's a group of people and they're chatting away together? How do you go about just entering their conversation?
If it's a group of people, you don't want to interject rudely. Join, stand there confidently as if you're just part of the tribe. Don't stand there with your body language closed, with your hands in your pockets again. Don't look at your phone in the group. Just stand there. And maybe you can even make eye contact with the person next. In fact, I did this yesterday, literally at a workshop. Make eye contact with the person next to you. And once they look at you, just offer your hand and shake their hand and introduce yourself. Even if there's a group discussion, now you've broken the ice with at least one person in the group. And listen to what they're talking about and interject politely when it's appropriate. Are you guys talking about that last football game? What are your thoughts on that? What team do you follow?
Hmm.
Just ask them for their opinions.
Do you think the people, when they enter those rooms and they're listening to a certain conversation, but they don't have much knowledge about the conversation beginning? Let's say if I'm going to a place where there's a lot of entrepreneurs, high-level net worth individuals, and they're talking about business setups or certain things, topics that I don't even understand. I never set up a business. How do I get myself on that place and play a part on that conversation where I have no knowledge of what their conversation is about?
It's a great question, man. I think a mistake that people make is trying to act like they know about a subject just so they can fit into the conversation.
Mm.
My advice would be do the opposite. Be curious. Ask questions. Even mention, you know what, I don't really know much about this subject. Seems like you guys are very knowledgeable. What would you say about X, Y, and Z? For example, something that I don't know much about is buying companies and investing in companies. It's something that I want to look into, investing in companies. Yesterday at this event that I was at, I met this guy, literally the way that I met him, we were just standing there waiting for the event to start. I said, hey, nice to meet you. Just shook his hand, started a normal conversation. Turns out this guy has written a book about investing in companies.
Hmm.
I don't know anything about that. The whole conversation, I didn't act like I knew about it. I just asked him questions. I said, so where would you start? Like, let's say you're a total beginner. How would you start investing in companies? And what would be a good amount to invest in if you're just starting out? So I wasn't trying to show that I know about this, you know, I'm seasoned. No, I'm ignorant. Tell me, teach me. This humbles you, first of all. And it shows the people that you're humble. It shows the person that you're talking to that you're not trying to prove yourself. And people love explaining things. People love being asked questions and for their opinions. So that's how you deal with it if you don't really know much about the subject.
So talking about your role as a communication coach, you mostly educate the executives, those high-level CEOs, I would assume. How do you have them in a situation where they're more rather liked or more also respected in terms of their authority? You see, because a lot of communication is more, a lot of people, they're trying to teach them to be liked. But in terms of authority, sometimes they also have to be feared or more respected in that case. What would you say to that?
The reality is, if you truly want to be respected, there has to be an element of fear. People don't like hearing this, but it's the truth. Because if they're not afraid of crossing a boundary, if they're not afraid of disrespecting you, then you don't have their respect.
So how do you maintain that authority, especially in a job setting or working as an executive?
You have it in the way you communicate. It's the way you communicate. How reactive are you? One thing that destroys a sense of authority and respect is being too reactive, being very reactive. For example, you're in a meeting, somebody asks you a question and you scramble for the answer and you start fidgeting and you're answering quickly and you're stuttering over your words and you're using a lot of filler words. Rather than pausing, taking your time, looking people in the eyes, when you slow down, when you're grounded, I like the word grounded, when you're grounded in your communication, that commands respect. And we do that through being present, deeply present to the moment where you're not overthinking. High-level executives who have an executive presence, they're not overthinking. They're not second-guessing what they just said. They're not worrying about judgment from everybody else in the boardroom. They're deeply grounded and they're listening. They listen more than they speak as well. So it's that aura. You want to develop that aura of authority that's under control. It's not tyrannical. It's under control. It's laid back. It's the king that's calm, not the king that's yelling and saying, I'm the king. It doesn't need to announce itself.
So when you're dealing with a lot of employees under you, let's say an employee misbehaves or doesn't really get the work done, how do you, an executive, communicate with that person in a way that it feels authoritative and get respected? Maybe the employee doesn't respect you. So how do you get them?
I believe a good leader commands respect and gives feedback by bringing the best out of people. For example, pulling your team up and saying, hey, I want to talk about this project that you're working on. And I've noticed that you've been lacking on the deadline and it's been more than a week now. Now, the reason I'm bringing you up is because I know you and your potential is so much more than what you're doing right now. I don't want you to just work as a 9-to-5 slave. I need you to be proactive, to be the leader that you know you are. That's why we hired you. This is why we promoted you in the first place. So what am I doing? I'm giving feedback, but I'm giving feedback in a way where it's like, I'm praising you at the same time. And you're not living up to that praise. Mm. You're not living up to that potential. And that's going to make them feel bad for disappointing you, which is a good thing, actually, because you're their leader. And it encourages them to do the work. This makes them respect you. Respect doesn't, when I said you need fear, you don't fearmonger to get respect. But now they're afraid to disappoint you. That's a healthy kind of fear. The same way you fear your father's wrath, the same way you would fear disrespecting your father. Every man should fear disrespecting his father, for example. That's the kind of element of fear that I'm talking about here. And you do need respect.
So if someone was being rude to me, what's the best way to handle someone who's trying to undermine me in this sense?
The best way is to not react. Give it a couple of seconds, because when you give people a few seconds after they've said something rude, for example, it makes them think about what they just said and it makes them feel uncomfortable. And then you can call it out. Hamid, what do you mean by that?
How would you call it out exactly?
No, that's what I would say. Hamid, what do you mean by that?
Mm.
That's the question. I would say, Hamid, what do you mean by that? Can you explain what you just said? Why would you say that? When you just become inquisitive about the comment that they made, if they're rude, for example, it disarms them and it puts them on the spot. And it makes them realize, even if they stutter or if they try to explain themselves, now they know you have boundaries. Now they know that they can't get away with anything when they speak to you, that they're actually going to be pulled up on it. So pause and call them out on it.
Hmm. So after you understand, but maybe their explanation doesn't make sense, how do you put that boundary in place that the way that you're talking to me is not something that I can tolerate?
Yep. So if it's something that isn't as direct and explicit that they said, you can leave it at that, because they'll over-explain themselves and now they know. You don't need to directly say, see, I just realized you said something rude. Now they know, and then you can leave it at that. But if they do it again, then you can pull it up. Or if they say something directly, you can say, what do you mean by that? And they explain themselves. You say, okay, well, I must admit, it sounded pretty rude to me. Or it sounded fairly passive aggressive. If there's anything on your mind, let's speak directly and openly. I'm open to hearing it. So you're less reactive. Mm. You're not reacting. Why would you say that to me? That's rude. How dare you? That's not in control. If you say, no need to talk to
you. Like you said, you always have to be calm and grounded.
Exactly.
Very well. Very well advice. In a world where people really get emotional about everything.
Mm.
They get very upset. They get very angry.
Too reactive.
Right? Yes.
They're too reactive.
That's very thing that's common. And I think we're missing the moment where we can calm ourselves down and be grounded and think before we react.
Agreed.
As I always say. In terms of what are some of the small social cues that makes a big difference in how people see you? We talked about body language. We've talked about the way you present yourself. But what about in terms of the way you maybe introduce yourself? Is there a certain words or communication, vocabulary, anything that plays a part on this?
Your communication is not in your words. Your words do not play a big role at all. It's your emotional state in the moment, your body language, and your tonality. That's the most important thing, those three things. Then your words. That's not as important though. But having said that, I do believe that there's a missing art in communication, very specific, which is manners and being polite. I don't think people are as polite as they truly could be. For example, when I speak to a gentleman who's older than me, I always call them sir. When I speak to a woman who's older than me, I always call, even if the woman's same age as me, I call them ma'am. How often do you hear that, man? You don't hear that that often, right? Sir, ma'am, excuse me, I beg your pardon. When you're extra polite, and I got this from my father, by the way, so shout out to daddy. But when you're polite, when you're extra polite and you have good manners, I think that really makes you stand out, especially while you're meeting people. An absolute pleasure to meet you. And obviously, you have the basics down pack. You have the firm handshake. You have the eye contact. One mistake people make, actually, this is a good one, when they introduce themselves, is they smile too quickly, believe it or not.
So smiling is bad?
No, smiling isn't bad, but smiling in a reactive way is bad, because there's a genuine smile and there's a real smile, which is going to have a real impact. For example, a fake smile, a reactive smile is, oh, hey, nice to meet you. Before I even look the person in the eye, like what did I do to make this person smile before they even looked at me? But instead, if somebody looks at me, somebody introduces me, they say, hey, this is my friend Shako, pleasure to introduce you guys. And they look at me and they look me in the eyes and then they say, hey, very nice to meet you. And they have a genuine smile slowly come across their face. That's way more authentic.
It's kind of a relaxing, not a rush way of smiling generally.
Exactly. And you'll notice, by the way, you'll notice when you meet people like this, they're more grounded. They're not people pleasers. They're not, you know, immediately smile just because they're meeting you.
Absolutely. So with all the conversation, we talked about introducing, we talked about being able to communicate throughout the communication, but how can we end the conversation in a way that will make it seem unforgettable for the person that has just met me for the first time?
Yeah. It's not the ending that makes it unforgettable. It's what you do during the conversation. During the conversation, the way to become very memorable, to become unforgettable, is by being the best listener they have ever experienced in their lives. And a way that I get my clients to do this as a practice, for example, is imagine if I just met you, I'm going to imagine in my head that you're the first human being that I've ever met in my life. Like I'm an alien coming to Earth and you're the first human. How curious would I be if you're the first human I've ever met?
You'll ask so many questions.
I would ask so many questions. What do you do? What's your name? What do you mean you do this? Like, what are you doing in that?
How are you living life?
How do you live life? Do you have a family? Like, tell me. And when you're curious about people, they become flattered. They love it, man. People love talking about themselves. And you can get them to talk about themselves. It's the easiest. This is one of the easiest ways to improve your communication skills, by the way. Just become a better listener. Ask better questions. And you will become unforgettable. The people that I've personally met as a communication coach, who I never forget after a networking event, are the ones that listen the best. The ones that ask me the best questions. And the reason I remember them is because there's so few of them. Very rarely. Very, very rarely do I actually come across people like this. I got to say, in the last 4 or 5 events that I've been to, I haven't met anybody who asks good questions. Nobody. But I remember one guy about 5 or 6 events ago that was so curious about me. And I remember him to a T. But everybody else becomes forgettable. That's just how it works.
Well, you shared a lot of different insightful advice for sure. But to come to the conclusion, maybe for the last minutes, the audience that are listening, something that is truly interesting for me from a communication perspective about relationships and finding someone. Let's keep it halal in Ramadan.
We'll keep it halal.
So let's say if a person is really interested in a colleague who's a Muslim or maybe someone randomly on the street or in the cafe. He has a certain value that he's looking for a potential spouse for his life. As a man, normally you would look for it. And same with the woman. She'll look for a man who could potentially be her husband. That's part of sunnah, completing your life. How does one approach that person in a genuine way and be able to, you know, it's not very common in a Muslim culture where you need to have a family to come and get you to introduce another. How does a person by himself or herself get to generally get interest in that person or really start that communication with that person so they potentially see if they can be a potential spouse?
Alhamdulillah, that's a beautiful question. And I can answer that because I did that exactly. In fact, I met my wife in a cafe. She was sitting down and I was interested. So I approached her and I expressed my interest very directly.
How did you go about it? Like, if you can share the exact question, what did he say?
Yeah. So actually the intention, when I started the conversation, I didn't state my intention directly at that point because that's very forward. And plus, I don't even know if I like her. I mean, just because I think she looks beautiful doesn't mean I want to be in a relationship with
her.
But I was direct later in the conversation and I'll explain. So I saw her sitting in a cafe. I thought she was beautiful and I approached her and I said, excuse me, what are your thoughts on this jazz place, which is around the corner? I just asked for her opinion about something.
All right.
And we started a conversation. I realized the conversation was going well. I said, would you mind if I join you? She said, no, not at all. I sat next to her.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. This is it, literally. And I sat next to her and we spoke for about an hour and a half. And I said, anyway, I'll leave you to it, but I really enjoyed this conversation. Would you like to get a coffee another time? And she said yes. And we did. We ended up getting coffee again. And on the first date, I told her in fact, we got coffee later that day. Like literally.
Oh, wow. Yeah. You just spilled it in.
Yeah. Like I said, I got to go home, but would you like to meet later tonight? She said, hey, let's do it. When we met, I just told her, and this is especially if you're Muslim, it doesn't matter whether you're Muslim or not. I think this is the best approach. I was honest with her about my intentions. I mean, I said, look, I'll be honest with you because I don't want to waste your time. I'm looking for a relationship. I'm looking to get married. I'm looking for a woman who wants to be a mother and I'm looking for a traditional relationship. What are you looking for? And her eyes lit up as I said this, because she's Muslim as well, alhamdulillah. And she said, my dream is to be a mother. She said, I want to be a housewife as well. I want to be at home. I want to work on my own projects at home. And I want to follow a man who's strong and who's religious. So we aligned immediately. If she said, I'm not interested in having kids, or if I'm not religious, or I'm not interested in getting married anytime soon, I'm not going to see her again. That's how you can keep it halal as well, like just in a public place. And I made a point of meeting her family very, very soon. I think it was like a week or two after we met.
Oh, wow.
I met her mother. So, and that's another way to go about finding a spouse, finding a potential wife. But don't rely, for those listening, don't rely on dating apps. Don't rely on Instagram. Sometimes they can work. I know people who are in relationships because they slid in the DMs on Instagram or Tinder. Sometimes it can work, but more often than not, I think we've lost the art of approaching a woman in a respectful, gentleman-like manner. And when you do that, it's very organic.
I think you have more chances with that than you have with anything like in DMs or not.
You stand out.
Yes.
You stand. She told me I was the only guy that approached her.
How many people you know that can really approach a woman? It's very hard. It's not something, because people have a fear of rejection.
Yeah.
They fear something that might not be even there.
Yeah.
So
it is that. It's the fear of rejection. And I say, men, get out of your own way.
I think it's more on the responsibility of a man to approach than a woman.
Absolutely, brother.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's the responsibility of the man. Like, you want a woman to chase you, to approach you, to take you on a date, you're going to get her to pay the bill for you?
Really?
What are you talking about, man? your approach, take the lead, take initiative. They love it. And you stand out as well, because when you do that, again, how many people do it? They don't.
Mm.
So you end up standing out.
Interesting. Well, it's a sound advice that you shared a lot. So what would be the final takeaway to the audience that are listening, whether women or men in general?
In general. Work on your communication skills proactively. Don't put it to the side. Whether you're an engineer, whether you're a teacher, whether you're a father, a mother, or a son, you're always dealing with people. You're always communicating with people. So why not sharpen and fine-tune that skill that's going to set you up for life?
Where can people follow you and get maybe in touch with you about your services?
Thank you for asking. So Sharko T. Lockman on Instagram.
Can you spell it out?
Yeah, I'm sure it'll be in the handle as well, but Shakotlokman, that's my handle on Instagram. You can reach out to us there. Let us know you came through the podcast. We'll take care of you. And that's it. We have YouTube as well.
So they can just DM you right there and then.
They can DM us, yeah.
All right. Well, Shako, it was a pleasure to have you here. And I'm sure the audience learned so much from this conversation and more they can learn from your Instagram. For sure. Thank you for having me. Thank you for being here.
My pleasure, brother. Thanks for having me.